Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 60, Zoology, Part 7. Here are some good source materials that, in addition to the 7th lecture in the Practical Advice to Teachers, could be of help to you in your work. Above all, I would recommend a series of books that Floris Books published some years ago. I don't know what is and what is not in print, but you might check in Amazon. And these are books by Carl Koenig, K-A-R-L-K-O-Umlaut-N-I-G, which can also be in English K-O-E-N-I-G, Carl Koenig. Perhaps some of you know that he was the remarkable physician who founded the worldwide Camp Hill movement. He also was an astonishing, prolific researcher and lecturer on any number of anthroposophical and educational themes. A lot of his work is still kept fairly closely by the Camp Hill movement, but fortunately, a series of books of lectures that he gave about, or articles, I'm not sure which, about various animals. And anything that you can get in this series, they are exemplary ways of speaking about the animal, drawing on scientific facts, in no way ever denying the validity of what scientists, zoologists, biologists, and others have discovered about the animals, but at the same time enhancing and expanding and extending these perceptions into the soul and spirit qualities of the animal world. So I recommend them highly. I wouldn't say, you know, make these your classroom presentations, but I would say that they can be wonderful models of a way to present virtually any animal that you wish, and you certainly may want to draw on some of them, especially if you didn't have time to prepare. So I'd recommend that strongly. You're going to want to be drawing animals yourself on the blackboard, on paper. You're going to want to teach the children a new way of drawing animals. Perhaps in fourth grade, they will be using pencil in addition to stick crayon and block crayon, and you don't want them just to start making little skinny outlines of animals. To get the gesture of the animal, to be able to sketch something quickly, you don't have to complete the drawing, just a matter of giving the children the gesture, the salient points of an animal. And I would say a very helpful book that is out there is Drawing from the Book of Nature by Dennis Klocek, who is semi-affiliated with Rudolf Steiner College. A book that will help you in all of the natural sciences work. And also a book by Van James, who teaches at the Honolulu Waldorf School. And this is a book called Drawing with the Hand, Head, and Heart, in which he goes through all 12 grades, methods, techniques, many, many examples of teacher work and student work to draw from, and does a very good job with the drawing of animals, again, by working with gestures, by, you know, making it a much simpler task than you might imagine. I'd also urge you, as I do most every year, go to a local community college if you can that may be giving a summer course on drawing from life, there may be a specialization in drawing animals. Sometimes a local zoo will have that. Sometimes a natural history museum will offer that sort of thing. And there, too, you may also find some good books on drawing animals. And as ever, your art supply store, especially if you're in a small city or a larger city, not so much in a small town, but you'll have a large art supply store. Perhaps it's connected with a local college or university. And there you go in the back, and there's the revolving case of Walter Foster art books on every conceivable kind of drawing, all of which provide very good advice and at least will boost your confidence in being able to draw the animals. I urge you to not succumb to the temptation to put up beautiful animal posters, you know, with photographs of the animals. And animal photography has reached such an apogee in recent years, and lenses and camouflage devices that the photographers have make it possible for them to get the most intimate, high focus, high definition photographs. They're great, they're beautiful, but that's the problem. You're putting something up there on the wall, and the child will say, "Can I draw that picture?" "Yes, certainly you can." It is so perfect. It's a photograph. You know, you can't get any more perfect than that. How in the world can a fourth grader possibly come close to that? They don't see how the photographer created that because it was the camera that just captured it. Very different from watching you step by step try to embody that animal in color and form. So if you must put up anything, then works of art. You know, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the De Jong Museum in San Francisco, all the great museums have ample supplies of posters. And they seem to be mostly of cats these days. I don't know if that's changed. But to at least show, perhaps, if you don't feel you want all the work on the animal drawings to be your own, show how other artists over the years have interpreted the animals. You'll even see in the main lesson books that are shown on the slideshow that I had the children replicate a cave drawing showing the ruminants, and also an Egyptian temple drawing showing an Egyptian carrying a calf across the Nile River. So certainly there's a place for that, to show how even in ancient times what an intimate connection there was between the human being and the animal. On a deeper level, anything that you could find of Hermann Poppelbaum, Poppelbaum, an anthroposophist who had known and worked with Rudolf Steiner, and a trained biologist who made the study of the animal from an anthroposophical point of view his life's work. And I think that his major book is called Man and Animal. I long ago lost my copy, or probably lent it out to a colleague, which is the same thing as losing it. And I don't even know what's available. You might have to go to the Anthroposophical Society library and try to get hold of something like that. Maybe Daedalus Books, which has a great supply of used books. They may have it. I don't know. Anyway, it's worth looking into if you want to go more deeply. And another, sad to say, long out of print book by Wolfgang Schad, S-C-H-A-D, German writer, translated into English, called Man and Mammal, which was written primarily for high school biology teachers, but which can also be very helpful for us, not so much in what we're going to bring to the children, but in what lies behind it, as a way of understanding animals without having to dissect them. And you may know that it's not unusual in public schools for fourth graders to have to dissect the eye of a cow or something like that. Not vivisect, thank goodness, but dissect. And we don't want to go in that direction, and Shad shows that we do not have to. Another very eloquent proponent of alternative ways of understanding life without having to destroy life is George Russell, who I think is now an emeritus professor at Adelphi University in Garden City, New York, outside of New York City. And George has had a very great influence on the work of high school biology in the Waldorf setting, particularly in the Garden City Waldorf School. And I'm not sure which of his articles are available, but you might want to look him up and see. There may be some good insights there for you as well. So those are some of the references. And of course, Rudolf Steiner's own words about the teaching of this. And you'll find some ancillary lectures, or at least excerpts from them, in Roberto Trusley's wonderful book, Rhythms of Learning, in which he goes through the curriculum with excerpts from Rudolf Steiner's lectures and gives a very good introductory material as well. That's T-R-O-S-T-L-I. You will meet Roberto again if you take our grade 6, 7, and 8 conferences, where he does the physics and chemistry instructional films. Before going on in more detail about the block, I want to mention a very interesting kind of change in the way in which this subject is taught that has developed, or dare I say evolved, over the past century since Rudolf Steiner first introduced it. For about, let's say, 1920 to about 1980, for about 50 to 60 years, the subject was taught very much as man and animal, and it was mostly about how the human being compares with the animals. And I'd have to say, on the whole, maybe it's the Germanic quality of Waldorf, I don't know, but it was very much our superiority to the animals. I mean, one could have called that as the main lesson. Instead of man and animal, rather call it man's superiority to the animals. And it was sort of like, we're going to teach those Darwinians a lesson or two. We're going to show them we don't come from the animals, but we are totally superior to them. And, you know, those animals can't hold a candle to us. And one would, you know, see, at least people would claim this is what they had taught the child. And so it was almost a kind of strident quality about it. And the children actually did not learn a whole lot about animals. And I can attest to this because I have friends who went to Waldorf schools, or the Waldorf school that basically existed at that time, the Steiner School in New York City, and described, you know, their man and animal classes, and they knew almost nothing about the animals. They knew a lot about the difference between the human being and the animal, and in a way it was like an assertion of their humanness. Not to say a little of that isn't needed, and I'm going to be giving you some of that. But I just want to mention that for years and years, that was it. It had little to do with facts about the animals, little to do with anything that we would consider today, you know, environmental or politically correct. None of that ever stepped into it whatsoever. And in fact, the word human wasn't even used. It was always man, man, man. And we know that, you know, that's definitely forbidden today. And then in the 80s and 90s, very rapidly, and once again, especially through the teacher training centers, this shifted. And it's funny, in Waldorf, I said evolved. Things don't evolve, actually, for the most part, in Waldorf education. They shift from one day to the next, sometimes in a very trendy way. Everybody jumps on the same bandwagon, sometimes a little bit more thoughtfully. But there was, anyway, a very big shift, and suddenly Man and Animal became a biology class, and it was all about, you know, learning facts and figures about the animals, and, you know, working with the different animals in different settings, and be sure we bring in all of these various environments, and, you know, show, let's look at animals that are becoming extinct, and what we can do about this, and how bad a thing this is, and so on. And I would say that, because when things change in Waldorf, sometimes those changes last a long, long time, probably up until, you know, the 2020s, sometime along the way, that has become sort of the big emphasis, and that's what everyone does. And I would say that too was called for. That certainly has its place. But that can have its own sort of strident quality, because we're doing the animals independently of looking at the human being. We're teaching the children facts, information about the animals, and we are not then pointing to that all-important, all-essential human-animal relationship. So, with that in mind, that being said, I am going to, in the next lectures, not sort of give you lesson plans. I think that one could follow Steiner's basic overview and structure, but rather to try to give you, you know, some background, some thoughts about the relationship of the human being and the animal. Some facts may come into it, if by accident only, so that once again, when you're teaching, there will be hopefully a healthy balance between all that the children excitedly want to learn about the animal world and all that you are going to be able to bring to them. So we'll proceed from here. And I want to speak also in the upcoming lecture about who is doing the teaching. We shall see.